All right, Gary. What are we playing this week?
Well, Cole, as you know, Mr. David Boy, aka David Jones, died recently.
Yeah.
And you may have seen retweeted in all of our Facebook the GIF that shows the many faces of David Bowie.
Yeah. No, I saw that.
Yeah, it's really impressive. You can buy a poster print of just all of the images, which I'm going to do because I really like it, and that's kind of the defining feature. Or not the defining feature, but the most well-known feature.
I would say the songs.
Yeah, I would say he's a master musician. but other than that, the thing he's most known for. So I've got that GIF running here on my computer. And I want you to kind of, you've ever seen Press Your Luck?
Oh, yeah. Do you want me to give you some beeps and boops?
Yeah. So it's going to go through that GIF, and I want you to hit the space bar when you
Gary, that'll pause the recording.
My space bar.
Oh.
This virtual space bar in our theater of the mind.
Okay.
Hit my space bar.
All right.
And then it's going to stop the GIF, and it's going to help us decide what we're going to play.
All right. Let's see your big bucks, no whammies. Go.
Okay, it has landed on, well, it doesn't really look like David Bowie.
Huh, that's like a low poly. Did he do like a Californication music video or?
Yeah. It kind of looks like the David Bowie's, Red Money for Nothing kind of thing. This is his image from that goddamn David Cage game.
Oh, wait, Omicron the Nomad Soul?
Yes.
Interesting.
Yeah, I'm going to say fuck. I don't like this game. We'll get into it.
Yep.
My name is Gary Butterfield.
My name is Cole Ross.
And you're listening to Abject Suffering, the show where we play bad games so you don't have to.
Why are you doing this to us?
Yep. And this week we're talking about Omicron, the Nomad Soul, the game by Quantum Dream.
Quantic Dream.
And a.k.a. David Cage's Fuck Factory. And the reason we're doing it is because it is the only video game starring David Bowie. And David Bowie passed away recently of cancer.
Yes.
And that made me really sad. And so we're going to talk about the game. Maybe talk a little bit about David Bowie.
Yeah. So this was a PC and Dreamcast game that came out right around the year 2000. It was Quantic Dream's first like major big release. And it was suggested both by Dr. Static from the Slack and also by Kevin Fitzgerald.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And we just kind of, chose it out of that, even though it didn't come up randomly because of the timeliness.
Yes.
Of that.
Yeah. So that's bizarre to me that this is the first and only David Bowie video game. It seems like somebody as future looking and future focused as he was, at least his outward persona, like he seemed to really embrace new technologies, even in his music, in a way that made me think that he would have like a Journey or Aerosmith like dalliance in the 16-bit era.
Well, here's the thing, I can explain that. So the when other artists who are similarly, kind of have similar amounts of integrity going on, we're doing similar things. So if you look at it, there's that Residence game. There's that Bad Day on the Midway game. Mm-hmm. There's a Devo game. There's that game. I want to say there was Neil Young, a game he was in or did the soundtrack for from the 80s.
Maybe.
Whenever all these kind of forward-looking people were doing that, David Bowie was out of his mind on cocaine for the entire year of like 19...
For all of the 80s?
For like 1984 to like, 1990. And then he was like... really stabbing in the dark, reinventing himself for a while. So like the time he was ready to be this kind of future looking, musician was just at the dark rise of Cage, like the Cage versus Bowie rise of just Dawn of Justice. Like that was happening at the time. So it happened to coincide with him, like after he had done all of this, reinvention stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And at his, like, I would say his second kind of creative nadir, the adult contemporary album Hours, this kind of coincided with.
Yeah, this is definitely, so David Cage has collaborated with artists before. Do you remember the name of the band that he included in Indigo Prophecy?
Yes, that band is called System of a Dead Man. Dead Man's Party.
It's a Dead Man's Party, yeah.
Theory of a Dead Man.
Theory of a Dead Man. There we go.
There we are.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, those guys. this is talking like perhaps over sugar of something that is not that funny, but I just remember when we did that episode, somebody wrote in, it was like, I hope you guys get to the end. Don't worry, there's a Theory of the Dead Man song at the end. Like, it'll work out, guys. I still think is super funny.
It's worth it. If you play Final Fantasy 13 for 28 hours, you get a Theory of a Dead Man song.
Yeah, that's like the ultimate reward of whenever you have to suffer through something for an excruciating amount of time.
But this game has it has Bowie's fingerprints on it. More than just the more than just his face and his music too, because according to things that I've read, he kind of consulted on the visual design and on some of the plot.
I really want, whenever somebody consults, though, I always wonder what that means.
Yeah, it's, you know, like, it's a really nebulous term. You're just trying to distance your boy from Cage.
I am trying to distance my boy from Cage. I don't want the worst of David Bowie to be with, you know, maybe the best of David Cage.
they just briefly kiss.
Yeah, I can't handle it. But like, I mean, that's a legitimate thing. When consult, like, could literally just mean like they send him a couple screenshots and they're like, choose two. You know, or like, which of these do you think looks better?
Mm-hmm.
Or it could be more hands on. I don't actually know.
Yeah.
And there are like some Bowie like themes and stuff in this.
Yeah.
It's also like a bunch of themes got into a fight. Like, it's like a street brawl of ideas.
It's also a street brawl of like genres.
It's a street brawl of genre. This is just like unfettered David Cage fuck wankery. Like, it's just nobody, like, he is like, he's like the George Lucas of video game makers, where it's like nobody will tell him no and nobody will call him bad to his face.
And we spent let's say half of the SOS episode talking about how Kojima is the George Lucas of video games. So understand what we mean.
Yeah, then why are there so many goddamn George Lucases in video games?
Because it's a young, like, medium.
Because there's not room, like, there's room for people to enjoy an auteur, but there's not enough room for somebody to think like this guy is unique but not really good.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's always, we're always so surprised by something not just being house style.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, this is an Ubisoft map, like, simulator, like a tower climbing, you know, map checklist simulator. Yeah. Like, it must be amazing. But no, it can be unique and bad. Like, yeah, that's a gulf of experience that exists.
Yeah, we eagerly embed ourselves to darlings. We're just searching for that.
Yeah. And this is, I mean, David Cage, like, you know, when we did Deadly Premonition, like, I didn't like it as much as you and Bob did.
Mm-hmm.
I like it more than I like Indigo Prophecy, though. Like, oh, yeah. It's not like it's on a level. It's more unique and cooler than that.
Mm-hmm.
I would say this is like the opposite of Indigo Prophecy, though, whereas like, this, from my understanding, when I played it when I was younger, and then also...
Oh, so you have history with this.
Yeah, yeah. Me and this was... I didn't play it. I watched Derek play it.
Okay.
Because we were both, like, super, you know, Bowie super fans. So I was at his house and watched him play a lot of it.
Mm-hmm.
This gets cooler, but has one of the weakest openings of, like, a game that I've played in a long time.
That's actually good to hear, because I played this for an hour in honor of, you know, Bowie. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I got nothing.
Yeah, you can't get anywhere. Like, it doesn't, like, Indigo Prophecy at least hooks you in and then takes a big shit, like, slowly on you. This, like, it just, like, you know, it starts off with this idea that this future cop named Kale, after, like,
after the leafy green, they'll give you kidney stones and kill your dick. Yeah.
A bewildering, like, just, like, set of images and demons having sex. Just whatever David Cage, like, sat back in a chair and was like, yes, make it sexier, you know, or whatever was happening to make there be a bunch of demons fucking. And yes, I know the emboss is a demon. But doing this stuff, and then you Kale addresses the player.
Like, he's asking you to revive fucking Tinkerbell.
Exactly. Yeah. If you believe hard enough, you can save the world of Omicron, inhabit my soul. So the whole conceit of this game is like, you are a game player inhabiting Kale.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of cool, right? Immediately introduced to, like, one of the big, like, emptiest worlds, where there's so much space between things,
mm-hmm.
and there's so little, like, the draw distance is so huge.
Yeah.
A guy defied anyone to get around in this town.
Like, and it's funny because you call your slider, which is the knockoff version of the slicers from Blade Runner, and you think it's going to be like fast travel, like, okay, I'm going to warp to a new map. No, it follows the car in real time as it goes around the block. But fuck running around that block.
That's super, super frustrating. it is so hard to get a handle on this world where every building looks the same, everything is the same color.
Mm-hmm.
Like everything, it's so monochromatic and ugly.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, I think, you know, you're supposed to go to your character's apartment, you know, which I didn't make it here this time around. I'm sure I did it when I played it, like tag teamed it.
I totally got there. Like I got a good way into the investigation.
What happens at his apartment?
Oh, you go to his apartment and his girlfriend comes in and asks you where you've been.
Is that when he has sex with her? Because I saw a YouTube of a really, really terrible sex scene. Again, just David Cage planting his seeds early. Like
literally. I think that you have an opportunity to walk back to the bedroom, but I was on the case because you can role play this and they give you the dialogue options. When people ask you questions, you can say, "I am not Kale. I am a soul inhabiting his body. Bring me some sugar water." You could totally just play it like, but just play it straight, and people are like, "Haha, that's a funny joke."
Yeah.
You go there, and that gets you kind of. That's your first step towards getting to the police station, where you're chewed out for abandoning your case, and you find out there's corruption on the force as they are trying to obscure the murder investigation, which may be linked to some kind of anti-government cult on Omicron.
Yeah. So it's essentially an adventure game.
Yes,
where you're trying to solve this murder. It turns out it's a demon. Bowie is in it as a character named Boz, who is part of a resistance thing, and he also plays a band member. You can find a club where Bowie's playing.
Yeah, playing songs off of Hours.
Yes, which like Hours is like there are a couple good songs on. Bowie doesn't have any albums with bad songs or with all bad songs.
Yeah, I kind of liked the track they used as the opener for
the credits. Yeah, that's one, The New Angels of Promise.
Yeah.
That is one of the better songs on Hours. Mm-hmm. Like, Hours is like a third okay. And then the singles, both Seven and Thursday Child, they're both like pretty strong melodically, but are just very adult contempo produced. Mm. And then you just kind of solve this mystery doing a bunch of different genre things.
Yeah. So whenever I look at just like a Kickstarter that's destined to fail, it's like somebody who got like Game Maker on a like a Humble Bundle and is like, I've got, you know, half of a high school education. I'm going to make the ultimate game, which is an MMO that has crafting and also has Souls-like stuff and also has open world and also has like that level of unrealistic expectation about your own creation. They actually they don't pull it off here, but they make a thing that runs with it, but it still doesn't work.
No. There's like a lack of direction and a lack of just navigating in this world is too hard and too joyless. Like it's full of one-way ramps. Like, so if you like every a lot of the buildings have these little tiny sidewalks next to them that if you that are one way, you can't step up onto the sidewalk. You can fall down the sidewalk, though. So, like, if you fall down, like, that's it. You have to go all the way. You have to go around. It might as well be a wall.
Yeah.
You know? There's, like, the sneak button, which is your inventory.
Yep.
Which sneak already means something, David Cage.
Yes, it does.
And it's also, it's not only does it mean something, but it means a verb that is often in video games.
Yep.
Why on earth would you tie your inventory to the sneak button?
Yep. And so I map that to control, because that's where sneaking goes.
Yeah.
And imagine me just oscillating back and forth between game and menu.
Yeah, trying to sneak past something. Like, that is so misguided. What are you doing?
Yeah, this is an MV for fucking wrist unit. It's your pit boy is what it is. And also, on the misguided side of things, sometimes a game and sometimes a creator will say, I want to create a language for this world, right? To lend it this sense of credence and culture, right? We see this in Myst with the Dene language, which is relatively constant throughout. We see this even in worlds like Firefly, where they adopt Chinese. Okay. pretty cool. You know, it can just lend a little bit of verite to it, which I appreciate. This, they just take all the glyphs and rotate them 45 degrees and make them look kind of like hieroglyphics. And all that it does is all the proper nouns in the game, you cannot read.
You have to turn
your head just slightly and blur your eyes so you can see the address of the building you're trying to go to.
It's really annoying. Like it just, everything looks a little bit like a word you recognize, but it takes too long for you to find it in order to be mm-hmm. effective.
Yeah.
You know, just like make it translated, mm-hmm. like have it like appear like in subtitles under it or something like that when you look at it.
Yeah.
Like a lot of the problems that are in this game feel like they could have been easily avoided. I think like the main plot from what I've read doesn't sound particularly like, it just sounds like weird. Like it's weird that you can jump souls, but it doesn't sound, and like when you die, you jump into another soul, but you have to grind your character back up.
Yeah, that's fucking crazy. I never got to that part. That's not a good decision to make with your adventure game. And
no.
Like they would go on to do something like that with Heavy Rain, where mm-hmm. some of the characters can die and the game still goes on. It just changes some of the later situations. So that's kind of the seed of that idea, that like death still matters. Like they open up by saying there is no save function, all of your choices have consequences, and then the first thing that you see is a save point.
Yeah. It's because it has combat and stuff, you have to have stats, because it's a weird, like, it's not quite a, every time that I've played like a David Cage game, which is all of Indigo Prophecy a couple times, this and then some of Heavy Rain, I mm-hmm. haven't played Beyond Two Souls. Or Two Souls Beyond, or
Beyond Two Souls, you were right.
Two Souls, Beyond Two, comma Souls, or whatever. The
Aiden and Ellen Page, or Aiden, sorry, Aiden.
Man, that picture of Willem Dafoe and Ellen Page looking so miserable next to a pontificating David Page is one of my favorite things.
Two actors I really respect.
Yeah, but they hated doing it. There's no way they didn't hate every moment of that, making that game.
Uh-huh.
Because of course they did, because they're making a game with David Cage. Yeah, but in all of the ones I played, they would be better without like gameplay. Like he wants to make, like he should be making like walking simulators,
mm-hmm.
like with like a couple puzzle elements. Because every time he's added gameplay to it, he doesn't know how to make a game.
Right.
It's unsuccessful and really poorly integrated. Like, mm-hmm. not to just, you know, go back, you can go back and listen to the Watch Out Fireballs Indigo Prophecy, but like that game doesn't mix game and story well.
No,
it's one
no.
of the worst executions of that I've played. This, it's like there's no even attempt to.
Right.
It's
just
like sometimes,
changes.
Yeah, sometimes you just have to, it just switches modes mm-hmm. to, you know, like this might be a mildly successful adventure game.
Right.
Because it has kind of an interesting setup, and the world, while visual, like aggressively ugly and uninteresting to look at, is interesting in concept.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't translate to cool stealth or fighting segments.
Sorry, cool sneak, all in caps.
Cool sneak segments.
Yeah, there's also a shooter section, which I never got to. I went to trigger it. You get a call when you're on a date with your girlfriend who suspects you of cheating because you disappeared, that there's a holdup down at the supermarket, and that didn't trigger. Like that scene didn't go, and I was like, "Ah, I want to shoot some dudes. I want to see how bad this is."
Yeah, there's no way. Dreamcast like.
But they but yeah, like it's just a scene change. And so on one hand, that's kind of them to do. It's like, okay, you're going to fully engage with what we're trying to make you do. It sucks that there are stats tied with that, especially when you have to grind on simulators. Mm-hmm. Like that is just an overtly hostile thing. But it's kind in comparison to what Indigo Prophecy did, which was we're going to choreograph a tiresome action scene and then have you 1/4 pay attention to it.
Yeah, I think that the difference in that is that it's like the Indigo Prophecy ones were easy.
Yep.
You know, so it's like it didn't add very much, but like it didn't subtract that much. It just felt like, and you know, to quote Gary Butterfield, like it felt like playing an unrelated game of Simon while watching a movie. Like, and that's what that is. This is like, I felt like with the little I played now and what I remember from playing when I was young, like you fail. You know, like the fight, some of the fight scenes are hard. Like you're going to die. Like it's trying to be challenging and engaging on a gameplay level. Yeah.
And I didn't run into that in my admittedly short time with the game. Yeah. I had a couple of fight scenes, and like the engine made a little bit of sense. It's just rock, paper, scissor with left and right attacks, high and low. And that's just about it.
I'm sure it like ramps up in difficulty too. Or like when we played it, when we were younger and we were just, better at games.
Yeah.
to. Check out this quote from Wikipedia on the reception of this game when it came out. Because whenever something like this comes out, I'm always curious to read reviews that are contemporary with it. Because like this like stinks of the type of game to me that like would get lauded when it comes out and then panned by modern critics.
Yep.
And this guy from Game Revolution says, the PC version of Omicron creates what is easily the most believable, versatile, and alive game environment yet produced in a PC title and puts you right in the middle of it. Once you begin play, you'll find yourself drawn into Omicron's unique world and gripping story, unable to play anything else, unable to think about anything else, unable to do anything else other than run to the store on a quest for David Bowie albums.
That's okay. That's just game reviews in 1999.
Yeah, I know. It's hyperbolous and ridiculous.
And so putting myself in the shoes of somebody playing this in 1999, if I had my Voodoo 3, up and screaming, and I just dropped $4,000 on a gaming rig, and I dropped into this open world game, the likes of which I hadn't played, the likes of which Real Cole wouldn't have played until Shenmue, mm-hmm. like I would have been down. Like, this would have eaten me whole.
Yeah.
At the time. And to be honest with you, I'm kind of curious to go back and see a little bit more of where the story goes.
Yeah, I would read a Let's Play of it.
Yeah.
If it were me. Like, I don't even want to watch somebody. Because you did watch somebody move around that slow. Watch somebody, like, tank it around. Watch somebody go into endless, like, just rooms full of three boxes. What's the word for money in this?
Like, Seikos or something like that?
Yeah, you can get, like, 20 Seikos.
Yeah.
On the floor. This came out a month before Torment did, and this guy called this the most alive city in computer games.
And before, a month before.
Yeah, or a month before, rather. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I'm just like joke's on you, motherfucker.
like, wait 1 month and you're going to see something. Yeah. But that's 2D and we can't have any more of that.
Yeah, that can't be real. Because mm-hmm. what makes a city feel real is how much, like, how wide, absurdly wide the streets are. It's like a city made up of, like, 10-lane highways.
All of the scale is just so off. Like, even your individual rooms, like, it's really laughable. Like, the closest comparison I can think of is, like, Max Payne, where your guy just feels so tiny compared to everything.
And it's like, I get that as a gameplay thing, but the issue here...
Is they're trying to create a believable world around it.
That's the whole point, is making a believable world and one where navigation is important. Mm-hmm. Like, it's an adventure game. There's a reason why old adventure games, like, you just see one, like, if you think about, like, Stan's used ship thing mm-hmm. in Monkey Island, that's just, it's one screen and you just see the screen and that Stan's. Well, and you can get to it.
It brings some art and some composition to it.
Yeah.
Right. Like they made a very difficult choice. And the thing is, this replaces difficult choices with stuff that you try really hard to make seem real in real time. And it confuses invention for effort.
It doesn't feel like there's any choices being made as what to show the player
mm-hmm.
and anything. Like, there's no point. Any screenshot of this game is not going to have any sense of framing or any mm-hmm. sense of, like, even place. Like mm-hmm. you're not going to know if you take a screenshot of this. Unless you're right in front of a sign, I defy anyone to, like, match that with a mental map of where they're at. Because how is this corner with just infinite fog and a big featureless building in the background different than this other one? Like, it just doesn't work on that level where it's like, that's important in mm-hmm. an adventure game. Like, you have to be able to get around. It's like, and there are degrees of that even in adventure games, but this is some of the worst that I've seen it.
Yeah.
And even like Indigo Prophecy did that well because you're confined to certain scenes. You just choose,
Yeah, they're very small. And, like, they did a good job of, like, proportioning your body, except for the huge apartment where all of the stuff flies at you. Yeah. I don't know.
If you're going to have me backtracking and going back to places I've already been to, like, solve puzzles, you need to make me able to go back to those places and remember them and easily, like, create a map in my head. And, like, I couldn't imagine making a map of Omicron.
No.
It is just a... Yeah, and it bums me out that there isn't, like, some weird 80s adventure game that David Bowie was in.
Yeah.
Or, like, he didn't actually lend himself to, like, a miraculous 80s, like, Labyrinth FMV game.
This is all there is.
Yeah, that kind of sucks. Like, he was really good. When you talk about him being, like, a technical pioneer, his website was really, like, forward-thinking. Mm-hmm. Early on had a lot of, like, social networking features before that was really a thing.
Yeah.
And I remember getting albums of his that had, like, they were like interactive CD-ROM kind of experiences that had the video. I think that this Hours, I think that had that as well. So he was up on that kind of shit.
Yeah.
But I got real sad when David Bowie died.
I saw that. I saw you tweeting about how much you hated Mega Man Legends, and then that immediately turns to your tribute.
Yeah, it's hate is a strong word, but that game's not aging well for me. Mm-hmm. We'll get into it again. We're not going to try to sneak a stealth Mega Man Legends episode into this thing. But the it really kind of blindsided me, and I was surprised because I don't care about celebrity death as a general rule. And I try not to be dismissive of anybody when they are, but when somebody's like a minor character actor, mm-hmm. you know, and then the kind of race to like put your tribute online.
Yeah,
about
that's
it,
a little,
there's a part where it feels a little bit salt, like turning it about you,
mm-hmm.
you know, and like, I get that that's not always the case, but you know what I mean? Like that.
Yeah. You can be
can
like,
sometimes come off the way.
I'll be sad when Steve Martin dies.
Well, totally. And
I'll be more sad when Bob Newhart dies, actually.
Yeah, like there can be somebody who's genuinely like important to you, but when mm-hmm. people are like, oh man, the guy who played who was the one recently? Oh, that was like the voice of Robin Hood in Disney's Robin Hood.
Oh yeah, he died the same the same day as Alan Rickman did, actually. Yeah. Which both the Sheriff of Nottingham and Robin Hood died in the same week.
Yeah. To fight each other eternally in hell. The I love Disney's Robin Hood.
Oh,
it's like, I'm not a Disney guy. That's my favorite Disney movie. I think it's great.
That Oodalali song is one of my favorite songs.
It's
actually
super good.
I tear up when I hear it.
Yeah, it's really, really, really good. Like that, I love that movie.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like he's a voice actor who did like one thing. Like that feels like when everyone was kind of like putting in their tributes up, it felt a little bit self-serving to me.
Yeah.
It feels like
a rush to feel something publicly.
Yeah, exactly. But then that's old Gary, because new Gary was surprised by genuinely how taken aback he was by Bowie dying. Yeah,
it doesn't matter until it matters to you.
Yeah.
I
recognize that as a thing that's I don't know what it.
But you've talked a lot about David Bowie before he passed away. Like
he is
a reference for you going. I mean, as far as I've known you, or as long as I've known you, like since the Dead Idea of a Holidays.
Yeah. And, I mean, it's hugely important to me. Like, it's not, dare I say, I feel it genuinely. Hugely, hugely important to me. I didn't think of myself as being like rushing to publicly grieve, but mm-hmm. it is something that it articulated the line between just kind of generally being dismissive of public grief mm-hmm. and that kind of like attention grab, you know, thing.
Yeah.
Like there's room for both.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I don't know. Like, this caught me by surprise. Not because I'm a huge fan of Bowie's work, which I like him. If I hear a Bowie song, I'm like, oh yeah. Except for his collaborations with Iggy Pop, which are just China Girl or whatever it is.
Oh,
I really don't like that shit.
do you mean like the Bowie China Girl, where it's like the, cause there's, well, let me Bowie explain to you.
Okay.
Because his collaborations with Iggy Pop, like if you like Iggy Pop other than the Stooges,
mm-hmm.
he wrote a bunch of the songs that are on Lust for Life,
mm-hmm.
which are like pretty popular. Iggy Pop songs. If that's what you don't like, China Girl, like the version of China Girl you're likely to have heard is just the David Bowie version.
Yeah, no, I'm thinking of the one where they were both singing. It was really bad.
Okay. Yeah. That's pretty excruciating.
Yeah. Okay. So if that is the case, like, I enjoy me some Lust for Life, but like, you know, just like, I'm a real poser when it comes to Bowie. Like I like Space Oddity because it sounds really experimental and it's a complete story.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I dig it when songs are stories. But Bowie dying, that hit me because he was one of those people that I kind of always saw existing.
Yeah.
Because he was ageless.
Yeah.
To a degree. Not just in his appearance, but like, and not just in the way that like when I think about Neil Young, I always think of him being 24 mm-hmm. and, you know, performing at Massey Hall talking about why he wrote Old Man. You know, mm-hmm. like I recognize that the image that I have of Neil Young will be ageless, but I know he's a cantankerous old man now who writes about his cars,
yeah.
you know, but like Bowie existed as this fixture who was like, oh, I never gave him a second thought because of course he'll always be there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's my big regret as far as not seeing somebody live.
Did you ever have a chance?
Mm-mm. No, mm. I mean, they were probably, he probably toured when I was like too young to afford like $80 tickets, and the $80 would be, they'd be more than that if he, you know, toured more recently than that. But any time I would have had the chance, I couldn't have afforded it.
Yeah.
But the,
it's always admirable to see somebody work up until.
Well, work and do like good work.
Yeah.
Like that most recent record is great.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's not just good. It's not like good in the way that I feel like whenever I hear a new Bob Dylan song, mm-hmm. I feel a little bit like we're giving him an attaboy for not dying. You know, like it's like those albums are like, he hasn't given up.
Mm-hmm.
He's not the Rolling Stones, but this isn't like prime Bob Dylan,
right?
You know, same thing with like a little bit with modern Elvis Costello.
Oh,
like
yeah.
If Elvis Costello writes an album where it has any energy to it at all,
mm-hmm.
everyone's like, good job, Grandpa. Like everybody, like, you know, goes out of their way to say like, it's a return to form and the angry young man is back and like
still wearing those glasses, huh?
Yeah. Like haven't given that up. But then you listen to it and it's like, oh, this is actually pretty boring and adult contempo. Cause that's, mm-hmm. you know, who he is now. And that's what he does. Like,
yeah.
And he doesn't, you know, like, it's just weird that like, boy, could it, like if ours was his last album, it would have been like, okay, like he wants to make this stuff that sounds like, you know, late 90s, like radio pop
mm-hmm.
music in this way. But then he didn't,
yeah.
and did stuff since then that was like not always great until this most recent thing, which is so weird. Like that, the lead single off Black Star is a 10-minute long, large parts of our atonal. The video, which like we're going to do at some point, a Teenage Dirtbags Bonfireside Chat crossover.
Yes.
For that video, because it is bloodborne as fuck.
Yeah.
Like, have you watched it?
Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah, it is. It is so creepy and weird.
I love it.
And it's just like he never lost his like voice in any sense of the word, like his artistic voice or, you know, his singing voice.
Mm-hmm.
You know, never like, and it's just really admirable and cool.
Yeah.
To see somebody do that. Mm-hmm. And like that album is like, it's like the, what is it? The Warren Zevon album that's written about him dying of lung cancer.
Yeah. That's heartbreaking.
It's like, well, now in retrospect, like a lot of elements of this album are like that.
Yeah.
Where it's like, yeah. Like you listen to some of the lyrics.
Did he announce that he had cancer?
No, I don't think so.
Huh.
But this is it. But this is an album about him dying. Like,
oh man,
that he managed to put out on his birthday a couple, you know, a week before he died.
Wow.
You know, which is just like super sad and weird.
I know we're running up on time, but I've got to say this. I know this may just be me being a vital 28-year-old saying this. I don't think I can ever retire.
Yeah.
I learned this lesson when I was real young and Charles Schulz died the day after his final Peanuts ran.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like,
that's how you stay alive.
Yeah. I think that, maybe different temperaments, because everybody in my family worked for the state and they had counters. They had electronic counters till the day they retired. Mm-hmm. And they were looking forward to, I don't know that I can ever stop working because I'm terrified of the dogs catching up to me.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I would still do things like retirement would be like leaving one job and like working on a book or something.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, so like I would never like, I don't know what retirement is where it's like I fish.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, I just that's the only picture of retirement I've ever seen.
Yeah.
So
but and you know, like neither of these people retired and death still caught them, but they were both able to like say goodbye mm-hmm. in the medium of their choice.
Yeah.
You know, which is just really really admirable. And I've loved like looking online and people posting all these like interviews and little snippets and stuff
mm-hmm.
that are just like really, really great, like really human and really charming and funny stories,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it makes me sad because it would have been like, I'd like to meet this guy. And I never feel that about things. Like I never feel starstruck. That's something I genuinely don't feel. Goddamn. I generally don't feel,
you know, step one's identifying it, you know?
Yeah. I generally don't feel, like I want to meet people whose work I enjoy.
Yeah.
Because I don't really know them or anything like that. And mm-hmm. Did you see the thing where he was telling his anecdote about when he's shooting the Ashes for Ashes video, which has him like dressed up as this like crazy, Pagliacci figure at some point.
Yeah. No, and, that.
They had to, reset the camera or do something where he had to wait for 15 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Because he was in the middle of a shot and this old guy with his dog just walked in front of the shot who was there on the beach. And, you know, so they had to reset everything. And while they reset everything, the director, ended up asking the old guy like, hey, you know, what are you doing? Do you know who that is? And the old guy goes, yeah, it's a cunt in a clown costume. and like Bowie was telling the story about it being like, yeah, you know, I kind of got over my head really early because like that puts it in perspective. Like it doesn't matter how famous I am. It's still like I'm a cunt in a clown costume,
mm-hmm.
you know, and like that's great.
Yep.
You know, and then have you ever seen the clip that he did, the extras clip?
No.
Oh man. So actually, like, as much as Ricky Gervais is pretty odious,
mm-hmm.
At this point, Extras, I'll go to bat for, is like a really good show.
Mm-hmm.
And the concept of it is very relatable and awesome.
I know the concept.
Yeah. Yeah. So in the second season, after he's made it, he's kind of in the section of a club, and he sees David Bowie there. And he strikes up a conversation. He's like, I'm a really big fan. I also work in entertainment, you know, with all of his like insecurities about what he does, and kind of tells him a little bit about why he's unhappy with his job. And then like David Bowie looks at him and then kind of like tilts his head a little bit and then turns to a formerly off camera piano and starts singing a song about Ricky Gervais. Where he's a pathetic little fat man, creepy little loser, like this really mean song, and gets like everyone in the audience to like sing it and help him come up with the words and stuff. And it's great.
Yeah.
It's a great moment. It's like, it's super, super good. So like this idea, like, yeah, the sense of humor about himself, mm-hmm. and I don't know.
It's weird. One of my favorite Bowie pieces of media is something he had nothing to do with. It's the fact that, the head of the Guild of Calamitous Intent and the Venture Brothers is David Bowie.
That's great.
Yeah.
Like that's so good. And all the jokes with that, where it's like him and Brian, you know, and it's like, uh-huh. I'm the Warm Jets.
Yep.
Like, I close know me with his sonic like scream.
Yep.
Oh man, I've been wanting to do a rewatch of that before the new season starts, and I gotta hurry if I'm gonna do that.
Yeah. Gary, we're running up on time. Thank you everybody who recommended this, especially in the wake of David Bowie's death. Hopefully there was some entertainment and reverence out of this.
I hope so too. And listen to David Bowie. It's good. But don't listen to ours. Like, the poor person who gets into David Bowie from Omicron.
Yeah, I feel like there's there is that kind of thing where you just you just end up getting into the weird version of an artist's output. Like, you listen to their acoustic album and then nothing else sounds right.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's just, okay. Very well.
Yeah.
Anywho.
Anyway.
What are we doing next time, Cole?
Well, next time, we're not able to announce it yet, actually.
Oh, okay.
So.
That works.
So live in mystery for 1 week.
Indeed. Umbasa. Yeah.
Who's a good dog?
Who's a good dog?
Which dog is going to hell?
All the pretty dogs are going to hell.